Okay, it is June 11th, 2023, 1922 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green with you here today. From 1977, this is a song that was number 7 on the Canadian RPM Top Singles chart, and number 4 on the Billboard Hot 100 in the U.S., and also in the U.S., number 5 on the Cashbox Top 100. It's from Foreigner, featuring the singer Lou Gramm, and it's a single called It Feels Like the First Time. Okay, now coming back to our, what did I just click on? Oh yeah, I clicked on the Wild Road article, okay. Thought I clicked on, it looked like a different article. Where are we in this article? Oh, okay. I guess I resized the window and did not reset the position of the cursor. And that's why we're in the wrong chapter. We want chapter 11. Have I even looked at this chapter today? I don't even know if I've done it. I don't think I have. I didn't prepare this chapter. I prepared the Bible portions by reading them. Let's see what we can do here. What have we got? We're in paragraph 11. We were in 11:6, I believe, yesterday. Right. Yes, we were. To the best of my recollection. Okay, so in Wild Road Part 2, Chapter 11, Paragraph 7, little ones, we've got Shawshank the Second. And I don't know what else we're going to talk about because I didn't read it yet today, but I've written it. See what, it's going to be a long one. Oh my goodness, it's quite long. Here we go. We're not going to start over just because we didn't read it in advance. Shawshank the Second, Hekaki Perry, or in brackets, Shawshank 2A, end bracket, as implied by his prenomen of an unique form, Hekaki Perry, that is. Tetley is the source, page 531 of Tetley. Let's see where, if we have a reference in the bottom to Tetley. We don't. I don't know, I don't even know who Tetley is. But that will help us find out where that came from. Tetley, or maybe we've referred to Tetley elsewhere in this article previously. But Shawshank the Second, Hekaki Perry, ruled in Egypt preceding Takelot the First, as implied by his prenomen of an unique form, an important distinction in chronological discussions as to the time sequence, but more importantly, that's Christine Tetley in her book. That's what it is. Page 531. Okay. But more importantly, it makes Shawshank the Second a candidate to be the famous or infamous Memnon of Shushan, Persia. Now, this is very important to understand what's being said here. The matching hawk-headed coffins of him and Harsisi A, son of Shawshank C, high priest of Ammon, in Thebes, Upper Egypt, whereas the delta is Lower Egypt because the Nile flows north, and son of Osorkon the First, also is Shawshank C, and he's the son of Osorkon along with Matkare, his mother. Now, these coffins that are matching hawk-headed coffins imply at least their contemporary nature, but many different theories confuse the identity of Shawshank the Second or Shawshank 2A, with Sorkon II being also evidently contemporary with him in part. These theories of lineage for Shawshank 2A will likely require our attention at some point, but for now there are some significant details which are not in dispute. For one, the tomb of Shawshank the Second, or 2A, was the richest find for any Dynasty 22 king, in part because all the other tombs had been plundered, and also because silver was in ancient Egypt rarer and thus worth more than gold, and his coffin was made of solid silver of high value. This alone may make him a very special person indeed. He died of infection, the result of a deep head wound. Harsisi A, the son of Shawshank C, was apparently buried in a coffin of a sister of Ramesses II the Great. And we know that Ramesses II ruled in our chronology from 1315 BCE, where Shawshank C, we're talking about closer to the time of Takelot the First, which is 919. So quite a long time after Ramesses the Great. So this coffin had been lying around for hundreds of years. But apparently with a hawk-headed lid of his own provenance was Harsisi A buried, placed on top this lid. The Ganymede or Tithonus of Greek mythology, that being the name in different contexts for the same man, Ganymede or Tithonus, reputedly a son of Tros, or Laomedon, although Mr. Crosthwaite in 1839 CE has already argued the same thing. So Ganymede was seized by Sesostris and made chief of Chusiana, or Susiana in Persia, where he was known as Teutamus of Trojan fame. Tros, Elis, and Laomedon were one man with many names, as the various versions of the story also demonstrate. So, some say that Memnon founded Susa, some Teutamus, whereas Memnon was said to be the son of Teutamus, who was the king of Egypt, and to whom Assyria was subject. And this king of Egypt was called Proteus, his year 32 being also the last of the war, or fall of Troy. So that war ended in 888. That's his year 32. Is therefore, or thus, 888 BCE. So we'd add 31 years to that, wouldn't we? So that's remarkable, because that makes a complete agreement with him being Amenhotep Zagdur, who had 31 years of rule on the Ethiopian king's list. It makes perfect sense from that point. And that also puts him at 919 for the beginning of his reign, which is the same year as Takelot, whose reign was disputed in the Delta, evidently because the king's name was not put on the Nile Key inscription. It was given as an unnamed king. So perhaps that was the beginning of the rule of this king, who is the subject. Who? So this king is Memnon. It's Memnon who began ruling, perhaps who was the other king in the dispute about the disputed kingship in the Nile Key texts. It's pretty interesting that there's a coincidence there. Now, also, this is fascinating because the last year of Laomedon was determined by the honest assessment of Mr. Crosthwaite as 932 BCE. That's the last year of Laomedon. Okay? For this was the last year of the Argonautic expedition, in italics, Argonautic expedition, and the exact year that Heracles, or Hercules, as he's also called, slew Laomedon. So therefore, after Laomedon the king died, another king would have taken his place. Thus, we would expect the heir to the throne and son of Laomedon to reign from 932 BCE over Troy the city. Now, for 13 years, it is said that Amenophis remained in exile from Egypt. And I remember, I looked it up today, actually. I remember now that Sir Isaac Newton said nothing about the 10 years, other than the 10 years that is mentioned in the Bible, about 10 years of peace from the fifth year of King Asa. So he gave that number the same as we did, or we got it from him. And also, we got it after him, anyway, but he mentioned the 13 years also, I believe. Is that true? I'm trying to think. I looked it up today. Where is it? I've got it here. It's called, if you want to look up Sir Isaac Newton, you need to find the work that he produced called Chronology of Ancient Kings Amended. I can't find it now. Let's see. Not there. Oh, I'll just search my history. That's all I need to do. Right here. Here it is. Oh, it was right there. Okay, so let's drag that or copy it. Let's put that here where we can see it. Paste into this address bar here. There it is. There's the chronology of ancient kingdom. Let's search for, we'll make the text bigger too, but let's search for 13 years. Okay. It's spelled out longhand. There it is. Right there. Let's just make it bigger. One more. Oh, that's as big as it gets. Okay. There it is. So he talks about Memnon and the 13 years. Right. So let's do previous. He stayed there in Ethiopia 13 years. But in this case, Ethiopia means northeast of Egypt, the area, in this case, around Persia. So that's what Ethiopia means here. But Memnon supposedly went back and retired there for 13 years from Egypt. That's what Sir Isaac also says here. So let's continue. And that was all he said. He didn't mention anything different about the 10 years from what we did. So I checked that, and now I realize that the 10 years that I was thinking about were all the questions I had in my mind about the 10 years when I wrote this article. And there were many different ways I tried to make it work, but I'm not done. There's much work to do on this. Much work, more that could be done. I mean, we could find something even more solid, but this looks reasonably plausible in terms of understanding how Memnon can be an historical person. So for the 13 years, it is said that Amenophis remained in exile from Egypt, right? Ruling Susa in Persia. This is said by Manetho. Okay. Amenhotep Zagdur from the Ethiopian king's list reigns for 31 years. And 13 plus 31, there's another idea, right? 31 years he reigned in Egypt. That's what the Ethiopian king's list is giving us. It gives us the names of the pharaohs. And Tawassia is the name of Takealot. Just like I was telling you, the names of the kings were different. Sira was the name for Osorkon, and Tawassia was the name on that list for Takealot. And we can see that the names coincide in the sequence of kings on the list, so we know that it is talking about the same kings of Egypt on the Ethiopian kings list. So 13 plus 31 equals 44, a number which added to 888 equals also, now look at this, 932 BCE. If you add 44 to 888, because it would be like subtracting 12 to 9 from 944, because you've got 12 years here after 900 here. So you subtract 12 years from 44, we get 32. 932 is the correct year, but that would be the year one then of Memnon. After 13 years, Memnon returning to Egypt. That's 13 years after 932. He returns to Egypt in 919. That's exactly when Takealot the first began to rule, in the time of the disputed kingship, which is demonstrated by the lack of the pharaoh's name in the Nile Key texts. Somehow they didn't believe that they knew which name they should put for the king. So Memnon returning in 919 to Egypt would reign for 31 years until the end of the Trojan War, 888 BCE. And his returning there also, when returning there, he would as well as he himself reigning for 31 years, he would place his relative Takealot the first upon the throne in 919 BCE. And his son Harsisi could rule Thebes from 915. So it's a very good correspondence. Now, we don't know whether he placed Takealot upon the throne, but that's what is proposed here. It's proposed by us specifically, it's not proposed by other people. The three unnamed kings of Manetho for 42 years. Now we look at it, it appears that they are simply Shoshank 2A, that's Memnon, and then Harzizia, who's the son of Memnon, and Osorkon II, who also ruled. So they're the three unnamed kings for 42 years. And the 42 years is from 906 when Takelot's reign ended. So 42 years from 906 is the beginning of Osorkon. Is that true? Yeah, because his reign was 43 years. So that's about right, the 42 years of three unknown kings. They didn't know whose names to put in, but they had a 42-year period in Manetho that Manetho gave us, transcribed evidently, possibly because Manetho lived after these events. He wasn't contemporary. He was someone around a few hundred years BCE who lived long after these events and transcribed these numbers. So this fits so well. And Proteus, Memnon, Tithonus, Toitomus, Ganymede, and King Shoshank 2A may be considered to be one and the same. Quite astounding information that we gleaned from all of the recorded historical sources that we found, that I found specifically, yours truly, in my research when writing this article. And it was intense research at the time. Now our proverb for the day, young ones, the wicked do flee when there is no pursuer, but the righteous are like a young lion that is confident. The righteous are confident. Our reading from Leviticus, and we now know quite a bit more than we used to know about foods and how foods are properly it's not important, I should say, it's not nearly as important nowadays that we eliminate all sources of infection from our food, which is implied by the word unclean, that there's some kind of bacteria or infectious agent making these foods unclean, and that's why Jehovah didn't want his people to eat them. But nowadays we know about vitamin C, you see. But of course, also, the law of Moses was abolished by the Christian sacrifice, or the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. He did away with the law. So these things don't apply anymore, but it's still very useful and historical to see what Jehovah did command. So in Leviticus chapter 11, little children, it's what we're going to now read. And Jehovah proceeded to speak to Moses and Aaron, saying to them, speak to the sons of Israel, saying, this is the living creature that you may eat of all the beasts that are upon the earth. Every creature that splits the hoof and forms a cleft in the hooves and chews the cud among the beasts, that is what you may eat. Only this is what you must not eat among the chewers of the cud and the splitters of the hoof. The camel, because it is a chewer of the cud, but is no splitter of the hoof, it is unclean for you. Also the rock badger, because it is a chewer of the cud, but does not split the hoof, it is unclean for you. Also the hare, because it is a chewer of the cud, but it does not have the hoof split, it is unclean for you. Also the pig, because it is a splitter of the hoof and a former of a cleft in the hoof, but it itself does not chew the cud, it is unclean for you. You must not eat any of their flesh, and you must not touch their dead body. They are unclean for you. This is what you may eat of everything that is in the waters. Everything that has fins and scales in the waters, in the seas and in the torrents, those you may eat. And everything in the seas and torrents that has no fins and scales, out of every swarming creature of the waters and out of every living soul that is in the waters, they are a loathsome thing for you. Yes, they will become a loathsome thing to you. You must not eat any of their flesh, and you are to loathe their dead body. Everything in the waters that has no fins and scales is a loathsome thing to you. And these are what you will loathe among the flying creatures. They should not be eaten. They are a loathsome thing. The eagle and the osprey, and the black vulture, and the red kite, and the black kite according to its kind, and every raven according to its kind, and the ostrich, and the owl, and the gull, and the falcon according to its kind, and the little owl, and the cormorant, and the long-eared owl, and the swan, and the pelican, and the vulture, and the stork, the heron according to its kind, and the hoopoe, and the bat. Every winged swarming creature that goes on all fours is a loathsome thing to you. Only this is what you may eat of all the winged swarming creatures that go upon all fours. Those that have leaper legs above their feet with which to leap upon the earth. These are the ones of them you may eat of. The migratory locust according to its kind, and the edible locust after its kind, and the cricket according to its kind, and the grasshopper according to its kind. And every other winged swarming creature that does have four legs is a loathsome thing to you. So by these you would make yourselves unclean. Everyone touching their dead bodies will be unclean until the evening, and everyone carrying any of their dead bodies will wash his garments, and he must be unclean until the evening. As for any beast that is a splitter of the hoof, but is not a former of a cleft, and is not a chewer of the cud, they are unclean for you. Everyone touching them will be unclean. As for every creature going upon its paws, among all the living creatures that go on all fours, they are unclean to you. Everyone touching their dead bodies will be unclean until the evening. And he who carries their dead bodies will wash his garments, and he must be unclean until the evening. They are unclean to you. And this is what is unclean to you among the swarming creatures that swarm upon the earth, the mole rat and the jerboa and the lizard according to its kind, and the gecko fanfoot and the large lizard and the newt and the sand lizard and the chameleon. These are unclean to you among all the swarming creatures. Everyone touching them in their death state will be unclean until the evening. Now anything upon which any of them should fall in its death state will be unclean, whether it be some wooden vessel or a garment or a skin or a sackcloth. Any vessel of which some use is made will be put in water, and it must be unclean until the evening and then be clean. As for any earthenware vessel into which any of them should fall, anything that is within it will be unclean, and you will smash it. Any sort of food that may be eaten upon which water may come from it will be unclean. And any drink that may be drunk in any vessel will be unclean. And everything upon which any of their dead bodies may fall will be unclean. Whether oven or jar stand, it is to be broken down. They are unclean, and they will become unclean to you. Only a spring and a pit of impounded waters will continue clean. But anyone touching their dead bodies will be unclean. And should any of their dead bodies fall upon any seed of a plant that is to be sown, it is clean. But in case water should be put upon seed, and something of their dead bodies had fallen upon it, it is unclean to you. You notice in any sort of food upon which water may come from it will be unclean, and any drink that may be drunk in any vessel will be unclean. In other words, if this unclean thing had fallen into the vessel that was containing a liquid which would be drunk by somebody, everything upon which any of their dead bodies may fall will be unclean. Now, in case any beast that is yours Now, in case any beast that is yours for food should die, he who touches its dead body will be unclean until the evening. And he who eats any of its dead body will wash his garments, and he must be unclean until the evening. So eating requires more action. He must wash his garments. He will wash his garments and be unclean until the evening. In the other case of just just touching a dead beast, a food animal, an animal that was edible. In other words, not the unclean beasts, but a dead, clean beast. If it was dead, it's unclean. So that person touching it would be unclean until the evening. But they wouldn't have to wash their garments unless they ate something of the dead animal that was a clean animal normally if it was alive, right? But anyway, and it was edible, but in its death state, it was unclean. And every swarming creature that swarms upon the earth is a loathsome thing. It must not be eaten. As for any creature that goes upon the belly, and any creature that goes on all fours, or any great number of feet of all the swarming creatures that swarm upon the earth, you must not eat them, because they are a loathsome thing. Do not make your souls loathsome with any swarming creature that swarms, and you must not make yourselves unclean by them and actually get unclean by them. For I am Jehovah your God, and you must sanctify yourselves, and you must prove yourselves holy, because I am holy. So you must not make your souls unclean by any swarming creature that moves upon the earth. For I am Jehovah, who is leading you up out of the land of Egypt, to prove myself God to you, and you must prove yourselves holy, because I am holy. This is the law about the beast and the flying creature, and every living soul that moves about in the waters, and concerning every soul that swarms upon the earth, in order to make a distinction between the unclean and the clean, and between the living creature that is eatable and the living creature that may not be eaten. That's the end of Leviticus chapter 11. And now we have our Mark reading from Mark 11. Little children, now when they were getting near to Jerusalem, to Bethphage and Bethany, at the Mount of Olives, they were getting near to Bethphage and Bethany at the Mount of Olives, he dispatched two of his disciples and told them, go into the village that is within sight of you, and as soon as you pass into it, you will find a colt tied on which none of mankind has yet sat. Loose it and bring it. And if anyone says to you, why are you doing this? Say, the Lord needs it and will at once send it off back here. So they went away and found the colt tied at the door outside on the side street, and they loosed it. But some of those standing there began to say to them, what are you doing loosing the colt? What are you doing loosing the colt? They said to these, just as Jesus had said, and they let them go. And they brought the colt to Jesus, and they put their outer garments upon it, and he sat on it. Also many spread their outer garments on the road, but others cut down foliage from the fields. And those going in front and those coming behind kept crying out, save, we pray! Blessed is he that comes in Jehovah's name. Blessed is the coming kingdom of our father David. Save, we pray, in the heights above. And he entered into Jerusalem, into the temple, and he looked around upon all things. And as the hour was already late, he went out to Bethany with the 12. The next day, when they had come out from Bethany, he became hungry, and from a distance he caught sight of a fig tree that had leaves. And he went to see whether he would perhaps find something on it, but on coming to it, he found nothing but leaves, for it was not the season of figs. So in response, he said to it, let no one eat fruit from you any more forever. Forever. Let no one eat fruit from you any more forever. It was a fig tree. It wasn't the season of figs. And his disciples were listening. Now they came to Jerusalem. There he entered into the temple and started to throw out those selling and buying in the temple. He had already entered Jerusalem prior to this. And he entered into the temple the first time and did not throw out anyone. But this time he entered into the temple and started to throw out those selling and buying in the temple. And he overturned the tables of the money changers and the benches of those selling doves. And he would not let anyone carry a utensil through the temple. But he kept teaching and saying, is it not written, my house will be called a house of prayer for all the nations? That's from Isaiah 56 and 7. But you have made it a cave of robbers. And the chief priests and the scribes heard it. And they began to seek how to destroy him, for they were in fear of him, for all the crowd was continually being astounded at his teaching. And when it became late in the day, they would go out of the city. But when they were passing by early in the morning, they saw the fig tree already withered up from the roots. So Peter, remembering it, said to him, "Rabbi, see, the fig tree that you cursed has withered up." And in reply, Jesus said to them, "Have faith in God. Truly I say to you that whoever tells this mountain, or says to this mountain, 'Be lifted up and thrown into the sea,' and does not doubt in his heart, but has faith that what he says is going to occur, he will have it so. This is why I tell you, all the things you pray and ask for, have faith that you have practically received, and you will have them. And when you stand praying, forgive whatever you have against anyone, in order that your Father who is in the heavens may also forgive you your trespasses." And they came again to Jerusalem, and as he was walking in the temple, the chief priests and the scribes and the older men came to him and began to say to him, "By what authority do you do these things? Or who gave you this authority to do these things?" Jesus said to them, "I will ask you one question. You answer me, and I will also tell you by what authority I do these things. Was the baptism by John from heaven or from men? Answer me." So they began to reason among themselves, saying, "If we say from heaven, he will say, 'Why is it therefore you did not believe him?' But dare we say from men?" They were in fear of the crowd, for all these held that John had really been a prophet. Well, in reply to Jesus, they said, "We do not know." And Jesus said to them, "Neither am I telling you by what authority I do these things." So that's the end of Mark 11. That's the end of our study for today, little children. And by the way, I had another laundry I had to do. I had to finish. I'd left one load in the washer. I'd forgotten that I hadn't yet put it in the dryer. So I had one more load to finish. Last night I was very tired trying to get to bed. After that, I was exhausted. I was just sleep deprived. That was all it was. But I was really sleep deprived. I was really needing to go to sleep. But I still had work to do to get the bed ready, because it wasn't yet ready. I'm not even sure if I'd even vacuumed it yet at that point. No, I had, because I mentioned those things in the video. That's right. But I'd forgotten that I'd left the memory foam pillows outside without any protection, and the foam got wet because it got some dew on it in the evening. After it got dark, they got wet, so I had to bring them in, and I've been drying them since that time. They're probably dry now, but I want to make sure they're dry before I try to use them. So I've been working on, and I had to do a new laundry today because I've left one pillow. I knew about it yesterday, but I hadn't yet washed it. So I washed it as well as the large throw that I had washed yesterday, but not dried at a high enough temperature. So I wanted to make sure that if there are any issues with these, I've not seen any evidence of any insects or, you know, bed bugs or anything like that at all. So I don't think I have any, but since I kept getting bit, or kept finding new bites, I wasn't sure if those were just bites that happened when I was outside the other day working, or whether, and I just didn't notice them yet, or whether it was something in the bed. So because I sleep on top of the covers, I haven't changed the covers or the sheets or anything for quite a while. So I just thought it's a good time to do all that laundering, and I laundered all of it. And like I said, I ordered a new cover too for one of the beds, but these covers also do a great job, I think, of keeping any insects away. And also, they're waterproof, the bed, too. So, that's a good thing. But I have many layers on top of the bed. And it's just so much easier to put a throw over yourself. Or in the winter, a down sleeping bag. You don't have to sleep in sheets underneath the covers, which is far more labor-intensive. But there's still a lot of work to do in, you know, every aspect, you know, bed, the clothing, I mean, the bed clothing that you wear when you're in bed, like your pajamas or whatever you wear, that they have to be carefully monitored and washed and kept clean and so on. But I don't wear those. I sleep in the same clothes that I wear during the day because they're very fast drying, very high tech clothing. And it's just a matter of deciding when to wash everything, that's all. Or when to wash anything. But and also when to wash yourself is very important, but it's another thing that has to be decided at all times. I need to soak my feet in Epsom salts, I think, because they keep getting inflamed, even though they're not hurting me. The inflammation is probably something to do with the fungus, which is typical foot fungus that people always get on their feet. And I need to put more foot powder in my socks when I'm wearing them during the day. I think I'm going to start doing that. I mean, you know, there's never any odor on my feet, but they get red. So if there is a slight bit of odor, I put the foot powder on them. Or I'll wash them, such as I did today. But we know so much more nowadays than we knew back in the days of Moses, for example, it's not that they didn't know either. That they wouldn't have known, but they didn't have vitamin C. They didn't have it. They couldn't go and pick up a large container or a small container of vitamin C tablets or slow release vitamin C with bioflavonoids or ascorbate powder. They couldn't pick that up because it didn't exist. It wasn't for sale, or it wasn't offered anywhere, or it wasn't available even in nature or anywhere. They didn't have vitamin C accessible in the kind of quantities that you need in order to kill infection and eliminate bacteria, such as is caused when you drink, you know, water with bacteria in it. So, or you eat food that has food bacteria, which is we call food poisoning. But anything like that is curable instantly with vitamin C. And people didn't know that even. Many people don't even know it today. I didn't know it until recently. But that means I don't have to worry about any bacteria in my water. I don't have to boil my water anymore. I finally realized I don't have to boil my water anymore. Because I can just take vitamin C if I get any infection. It's simple. And you take it in the quantities I've discussed many times that many other people are also discussing. Not many people are discussing, but more than just me. It's more than just me who knows about these things. Andrew Saul, for one, the author of the DoctorYourself.com website, he knows about it. The late Robert Cathcart III knew about it. We've talked about him, and I've shown some of his videos. But he has videos online. You can find them. But many people, it seems like many to me, but there are very few people who know about vitamin C and actually use it in the way that I'm doing now. And I just realized just sort of yesterday that I'm new progress every day. I've just realized that I don't need to boil my water anymore. Because what's the point? If I get sick, I just take vitamin C. And I can take vitamin C proactively, too, to preventively. Which I also do, but, you know, just 1 or 2 grams a day, basically. But it's basically a multi-gram treatment if you need to cure an infection. It's multi-gram. And you're not allowed to, if you're trying to make money from any of these supplements, by selling them, you're not allowed to say that vitamin C cures any disease because that's prohibited by the FDA if you're selling something. That's the law. So, at least in the U.S., right? You can't say this cures anything. You get in big trouble if you're trying to sell it. But if you're not trying to sell it, we can say it all day long. Vitamin C cures every infection known to man. It's phenomenal. You just have to take it in the right amounts at the right intervals. You know, and I'm not going to keep repeating it every day because I've talked about it so many times. But also, there's going to be more that we learn. I'm sure. And that's all for today. This is June 11th, 2023, Sunday. It's 20:07 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green, and for me, it's Phoebe and Annie saying bye for now.